Knock, knock, guess who is knocking at your door? That's right, you know it's the morning for sure. Might be a GRF, it could be. Maybe it's Mitt Romney. You know you love This Week in Mormons, original Mormon news. If you love Lindsey Sterling, Bryce Harper in Utah, and Jell-O salad foods, oh, you're gonna love this show.
We kind of suck at that.
We maybe should have practiced that one.
Don't laugh at me, Rosemary, my goodness. I bring people on and they mock me, but that's the story of my life. Welcome to This Week in Mormons, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in. We're glad that you're with us. I'm going to do my best not to be annoying this week, and that's why I've brought on a couple of all-stars so they can do the heavy lifting and you can have less of me and more of them, and that's what everybody wants anyway. So I would love to introduce my wonderful co-hosts for the week. First of all, you know her from many places. She's Utah's It Girl. It's Rosemary Card.
Yay!
Whoa. Rosemary. I'm adding that to my Tinder profile.
Is Tinder still a thing?
Is Tinder still a thing or mutual? I don't know.
Is I guess mutual a thing?
I've been off for a little bit, so
it's been
a little rusty.
I've sat with some single family members who are on mutual. I think it's fascinating because I got married before all the swiping stuff started, so it's got to be addictive. No success thus far, then, huh?
No, I'm single. I mean, I'm dating someone, but I'm not married.
But how serious is it really?
What?
Tell our listeners about your personal life.
No, I've done that before.
Okay.
I've made that mistake before. Never again will I.
All right. Well, we're going to pressure you slowly over the next 40 odd minutes to divulge all of your details. But before we get to that, of course, I would be remiss if not to recognize the wonderful Devin Thorpe, who's also here joining us. Hello, sir.
It's an honor to be here with you, Jeff, and with Rosemary. Thank you for having me.
That's very kind and sincere, and I don't know how to respond to that. But it's my pleasure. Thank you, both of you, for joining us this week. So before we get to brass tacks, I think it behooves us to learn from what's going on with these our wonderful co-hosts this week. So, Devin, why don't you give the listeners the lay of the land? What are you up to? Tell us what you do and why you're here.
Well, I'm trying to change the world, make it better. What is getting a lot of my brain share this week is Giving Tuesday. So, Giving Tuesday comes up the Tuesday following Thanksgiving. And I don't know when this will air, so that may be in the future or in the past. But on the Tuesday following Thanksgiving, it's the world's biggest giving day, global day of giving. And to kick off the traditional year-end giving season, well, I do a 24-hour live stream on Giving Tuesday.
Whoa.
On your world account?
Yeah, yeah. It's actually, you can find it at GT, as in Giving Tuesday, streamathon.org. You can go there right now and get queued up. If you're a nonprofit and you're listening to this before Giving Tuesday, you can still apply to be on the show. I've got about 75 nonprofits already queued up. I'm trying to get 25 more. It's just a marathon. As you can imagine, all day talking to people who are raising money, trying to help them promote their good works and try to help them raise money. And it's just absolutely a ball. And I definitely remember not really knowing where I was or what I was doing after about 22 hours. So.
So you're not on camera the whole time, but you are emceeing the event.
Yeah, I'm on camera pretty much the whole time.
Whoa.
Wow.
Yeah, I'll queue up a commercial for our sponsors to run to the restroom, and then I'll just sip Coke Zeros for 24 hours.
Wow!
And eat peanut butter sandwiches.
That's impressive, sir.
I know a darling nonprofit that I want to send your way.
Well, please do. Please do.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
And what's the purpose behind? And so this is one facet of what you do. And so explain to everyone your world with Devin Thorpe and the greater purpose.
So I settled on a few years ago a clear mission statement, which is to help solve the world's big problems by 2045. And when I say big problems, I'm talking about extreme poverty, preventable disease, and climate change. And I think we can make great progress on all those things by 24. Remarkable progress. I'm excited about, you know, just take 1 second and imagine a world where there's no malaria, right? And no polio and no AIDS and no tuberculosis. Imagine a world where there's no one who doesn't know where their next meal comes from. Everyone has food. Everyone has clean water. Everyone has a place to go to the bathroom. Imagine a world where we can stop talking about climate change because we're all living off of solar and farming in productive, regenerative ways. I mean, we can just live in this amazing, amazing world. And it doesn't have to be just for our grandchildren and our children. It can be for us, right? The three of us are all going to be alive in 30 years. We can see this. It'll be exciting. So that's my sales pitch.
Now, to play devil's advocate, a number of listeners of This Week in Mormon, our listeners are across a wide variety of persuasions. To some of them, you might sound like a communist. So,
right.
So just to humor this, what do you say to that part of our listenership who is listening to you and thinks that there's a tree that needs hugging?
Yeah, please. Yeah. So, you know, there's no question. I'm pretty liberal. And if I could wave a magic wand, we'd all probably live in Sweden or Denmark, right? That's kind of my worldview. But I also recognize that if we're talking about American politics, that if I were to superimpose that on America today, some people would be upset about that. So I really have a great deal of respect for moderates who are willing to meet in the middle and talk about compromise and that sort of thing. I confess not a whole lot of respect for people who think climate change isn't real, because it is.
All right.
Science.
Yes, science. Go science.
It's legit. That pesky science.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is good stuff. I'm glad you're here. I like the perspective you're going to bring.
Yeah, every group of Mormons needs a communist once in a while.
You should come to my Elders Quorum book club. I think you'd be
that could be dangerous.
No, it's not bad. I've been tempted to see if I can get permission to record it and start a podcast. This is my idea, everyone, by the way, and call it the Elders Quorum Book Club, which sounds like some kind of, I don't know, eat, pray, love kind of thing, but the Elders Quorum Book Club.
Yeah.
And because we have libertarians, shocker.
Yeah.
We have Republicans. We have the more liberals. It's a big mix. We need a healthy mix.
By liberals, you mean people who think Donald Trump isn't perfect.
Yes, but I don't know if it's because I live in... I don't know if it's because I live in the D.C. area, but I have many conservative or at least Republican friends out here in the church who are not big fans of the president either, and quite adamant about it.
Yes,
so
I just think there are actually, of course, I live in downtown Salt Lake, and there are a lot of us crazy liberals here in this neighborhood, which is a little bit ironic.
Well, it's downtown Salt Lake. Rosemary, I'm sorry. I don't want you to feel like we've been ignoring
you. No, I've just been listening. I'm all for this whole conversation.
I'm all for sitting here and not having... So tell us about... You do a lot of stuff, Rosemary. 2018, I would say, has been a pretty big year for you. But for our listeners who aren't aware of you, perhaps you could give them a rundown of...
What do I do?
Of everything you... Yeah. Tell
us
about yourself.
So my main thing that I do is I have a temple dress company called Qnor. We are actually celebrating the third anniversary of the company tomorrow. So that's very exciting. It'll be November 20th. And I have a book called Model Mormon that was released this spring. It shares my experiences as a international runway model in my teens. And then kind of through some faith progression, some people may call it faith struggles or trials, but just coming to grips with questions and concerns and being okay with that kind of stuff. And then I also have a podcast called Q More that just launched in September, I want to say, and we're almost wrapping up the first season in December.
It is awesome.
Now, so Q Noor, I think of like Queen Noor of Jordan. What is, maybe I'm just an idiot.
No.
What is the name Q Noor?
So Noor is the Arabic word for light. It is kind of like then. The Jane of the Middle East. I did a study abroad at the BYU Jerusalem Center, and that's where I got to know the name and thought it was really beautiful. And that's also where I was introduced to Queen Noor, who was the former Queen of Jordan. And she has an incredibly fascinating story. And I really, really admire her as a person. And so when I was thinking about what to name my company, I thought of this name Noor because I thought it was really beautiful. And then I just thought it made sense because when I was little, my mom taught my sisters and I that the temple is like the where we learn how to be queens. And so I didn't want to call it Queen Noor because obviously that's already an individual. So we just made it Q Noor.
So my assumption was actually the
truth. It was actually spot on. So it's not named after her. No. She definitely played a role in inspiring it. And also because I knew I could rank really well on the SEO for Q Noor.
Now, I have a question for you, Rosemary. This beautiful dress you call the Chieko, is that named for a former General Relief Society president? You're too young to even
the
remember.
The woman, the myth, and the legend? Absolutely it is.
Excellent. Very good taste. Yeah. Very good taste.
Now, is that a common trend? Are you naming all of your dresses after former members of the Relief Society General Presidency?
No, all the dresses are named after women who have played important roles in my life. So my mom, my grandmas, sisters, nieces, and then Chieko.
I can respect that.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. Now, Q Moore, I've always thought, does that mean like question more? Is that
nailed it.
Even though it's alliterative. Well, not alliterative, but it rhymes. So, okay, I got it. I'm figuring these things out. I'm kind of dense, but I thought I might get
there.
Well,
that makes me happy. If you can do it, then most people can do it, right? Let's hope.
I hope so. Yeah, I am kind of the lowest common denominator on most things. So, definitely.
Just teasing you. Yeah.
No, you're doing great. And Model of Mormon's a great book. I believe one of our other hosts on This Week in Mormons reviewed it when it came out and was quite a fan. So, pick that book up, folks.
Yeah. Thank you so much. It's been, people have been really happy with it, which makes me really happy. So it's been fun.
Okay. So more importantly, tell us about your boyfriend. How's that going?
No. No, this is great. This is like practice for Thanksgiving. I'm just practicing.
You have to tell us that. Is he taking part in Thanksgiving? Do you have to be prepped? Are you going to have to be answering questions? Is he performing for the family?
If anything, I feel like he needs to be more prepped. No. So, see, this is a trick. You're trying to trick me into sharing more information. I know his family very well. I am familiar with not most of his extended family, but extended family members. So I'm going to his family's Thanksgiving, and it will be no big deal. And then my family, it's like the away year for all my married siblings. So we're just going to have something super small and
Boston Market.
So it shouldn't be too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Shouldn't be too bad at all.
Well, we hope it is full of dramatic professions of love. That's what everyone wants to hear.
In front of everyone over pumpkin pie.
Sure. If anybody wants pumpkin pie, my realtor randomly brought one over the other day and my entire family's out of town. So I have a Costco-sized pumpkin pie that I will never eat.
Oh, that's so sweet.
So folks, if you want to come to Northern Virginia, I will share it with you. Happily so. I'm only here for a few more days before I go to California, but I can give it to you.
What part of California are you headed to?
Will the Amazon headquarters be open by the time
you get
back?
Only wish and hope. Sadly, it will not. Yeah, that's been quite the rage out here. Yet. So Crystal City, not too far from where I live. Old stomping grounds. They're actually building a steak center in Crystal City as we speak, which is going to be a mixed-use development. It's urban. The church is building one of these condo tower deals, but then the bottom three floors or something along those lines is going to be a steak center because the... We're a little overpopulated in some parts of the D.C. area. You've got a lot of meeting houses with like four wards meeting in them, which has been really fun with a three-hour block. A two-hour block might make it a little bit easier. Or maybe then they'll have five. Oh my gosh, I don't know. Who knows what they'll do at that point. But Yes, I'm going to my wife's San Diego for Thanksgiving, so that'll be fun. And I will get to unite with all my California peeps, of which I am one. I'm from Orange County, and my wife's from San Diego. So it's fun to go home.
Very fun.
Yeah. See everybody. It's a good time, man. Going to have some In-N-Out, probably some Del Taco. It's mostly about food for me because there's no good Mexican food in D.C. I've lamented this many times. I'm like the Jeremiah.
Del Taco is your
good food in San Diego for
Mexican.
I should not have put these in the same sentence. Del Taco is more a, hey, I grew up going to Del Taco and I can't have it, so I want it. But
okay, I was going to say, I'm pretty sure San Diego has more to offer than Del Taco.
Yes, it does. Fidel's, perhaps. There's much more legitimate place. And Fidel's could be great, Devin, if you want to come, because it's named Fidel's and you can think about communists. It's perfect for you.
Excellent.
You should be there too. Devin, are you a native of Utah?
Yes, I was born in Provo when my father was doing a PhD at BYU.
Wow. And did you stay
in
Provo?
I lived in Provo probably a year and a half of my life, but I remember the grad school experience as a toddler when I was getting shuffled around in a car that caught on fire.
I'm sorry? What?
Yeah. No, I was probably 18 months old. And it's interesting. I have pretty vivid memories of looking under the hood that was raised while I was still sitting in the car and seeing the flames coming out of the engine. And
oh, my goodness.
And then I don't remember how I got there, but I remember standing in the apartment breezeway where the glass from the fire extinguisher had been broken out. And, I don't even remember being afraid. I was probably too young to understand that that might be a dangerous situation. But that's my first memory, I think.
That's pretty good, though. 18 months old, most people can't remember. So
yeah.
Good on you.
Yeah, that's incredible.
I don't remember anything from being 8. My first memory is when I tripped going to preschool and skinned my nose right on the tip. So I looked like a clown when it was healing. Like this nice, it's okay. I'm okay, Rosemary. I'm okay. Yeah, it was fine.
Nothing the therapy can't fix.
I mean, it took a while. I still don't like clowns, but that's for other reasons.
Does anybody like clowns? Why do clowns exist?
I've thought, Devin, you seem like the kind of guy who might know the big question, why do clowns exist? I feel like you can give us the answer to that.
No. Nope.
I want to say it's rooted in like old Venetian culture. Let's just say it's that. It's something along those lines.
Yeah, that sounds very erudite.
Oh, I love this. He uses words like erudite, everybody. Devin gets to stay forever. He uses all the words I learned when studying for grad school for the GRE, but he actually uses them. This is going to be brilliant. You may come to my place of employment where I get teased as an editor for trying to use correct grammar in our writing. Yes, that kind of institution.
That's great.
That seems bizarre.
Mormon things are also happening, people. Things in the news. Things that matter to one another. That's been a moderate week in Mormonism, I would say. Nothing earth-shattering's happened that I'm aware of.
Is rare for us recently.
In these days, I mean, yeah, you've got President Nelson's just... I really think he kind of enjoys this. Like, he's kind of needling us a little bit and being like, ha-ha!
Well, I think he's had a long time to think about what he would do.
He has been unleashed, as we learned from his wife. Unleashed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about unleashed.
That's an interesting issue, really, when you think about it. It reminds me, do we have a minute to go there, Jeff?
Sure. Yeah, go there all you want, buddy.
Okay. Just, I hate to ruin the flow, but what am I... One of the interesting quotes I heard once, and I shouldn't say it here probably because I haven't verified it, but I heard that President Kimball once said that he had to get the ban on blacks in the priesthood reversed or repealed or revoked or rescinded or removed because his successor would not do it. If it were up to him. And I thought that was an interesting comment. And, you know, in my mind, that was something about which I'm proud to think of of him crusading on that topic. And it builds my fondness, and I have great fondness for President Kimball. But at the same token, or at the same time, I think, well, you know, when President Nelson talks about being unleashed, or his wife talks about him being unleashed, it implies that he's had a list of things he wants to do, like President Kimball had. And that isn't how we think the prophet works, right? That isn't, right. That isn't the model we conjure when we think about how does the prophet work. Anyway.
Right.
Yeah, I think the model many of us think of is a new prophet comes in and just kind of says, all right, tell me what to do.
Right.
I'm here.
But
I think that would go against the model we know of gospel understanding. I mean, of course, personal interests and biases and things come into play. But I mean, where else in the world of personal revelation or of serving in the church are we supposed to just sit there and say, direct me? Right. I think the whole church it's all about being a go-getter and having ideas, and whether you pray about it for your auxiliary that you're overseeing and then making sure the bishop's okay with it, whether you have priesthood keys and you're praying about stuff. I think in the end, yeah, it really does come down to one, people want to pursue certain things. They still clear it upstairs, so to speak.
Yeah,
But I imagine they have a lot of things. But it is kind of fun to see how President Nelson has clearly dwelled upon a lot of things. That said, I think a number of the more recent changes have been years in the works.
Yeah.
Obviously, they've been talking about a lot of this stuff. But for whatever reason, the Lord, perhaps, it's all speculative, but wanted to hold off until there was a more able-bodied prophet, perhaps, to sort of lead the charge on this. I mean, President Monson was in no state to kind of really have the energy to tackle all this for the past couple of years.
Yeah,
really.
That's right.
No fault of his, but...
Yeah. It is interesting, for sure. I think about President Benson. You know, he was... You know, you go back and read his conference talks from his years as an apostle, and he regularly makes mention of political things, especially the evils of communism. But I'm pretty sure, I've never double-checked, I shouldn't say stuff before I double-check, but I don't think he ever uttered the word communism in general conference as the prophet.
He changed a lot. He really, I mean, exactly. If you knew the Elder Benson, who was affiliated with the John Birch Society, and a lot of these things going on in the 60s and 70s, he was very different as prophet. And I don't know if that was wisdom or because the mantle changes you.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
It's comforting, for sure.
It is comforting. I knew a lot of people.
To the communists, especially.
They're not coming for you anymore. No, don't worry.
Yeah. It's right. Off the dogs.
I don't know about you guys. I was like fine when President Nelson came in. I think the only real way I felt there was anything different was for much of my youth, for much of my adolescence, even my young adulthood, President Hinckley and President Monson had sort of been around and prominent for a very long time, right? Whether or not they were the actual presidents of the church, they were in the mix for a very long time together. And so when President Monson passed away and President, you know, Russell M. Nelson now leads the church, I just kind of had like an emotional shrug, I guess. And, all right, here he is. So I felt like it was a closing of a big chapter in my life. But a lot of people, I knew many who were... wary perhaps of the incoming administration, especially with President Oakes being in there. I don't know. I'm not trying to get off base here. Do you guys kind of know what I'm meaning?
Yeah, I think so. I think there are a lot of people who are nervous, and some of us are still nervous about what might come, especially when we hear about him being unleashed. But I think certainly I'm a huge fan of two-hour church. I'm a huge fan of ministering, huge fan of combining elders and high priests. So there's a lot of stuff that's been going on that I am really enthusiastic about. That's for sure. I'm really curious, Rosemary. I think my one and only son is older than you. I was a very young father, but still we're a generation apart. What's your take on all this?
The changes? Like specifically? I mean,
do you like President Nelson? I think that's the question. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. So, I mean, I worked at the church in the film department, and one of the last projects I worked on was Elder Nelson's 90th birthday video. So I went into his office and helped film this video, and I just really, really sweet guy, and has done some really incredible things. Like a year and a half ago, was it, when we had a general conference where there was only one woman who spoke, which is the same as our most recent general conference. I felt really upset about it, and I wrote him an email. And he wrote me a very nice letter back. And so I have a lot of respect for him, and I really like him. I love a lot of the things that he's doing. I probably have a more liberal view on the follow the prophet and all that kind of stuff than most, or than what, I don't know, like more of like a mainstream Mormon or member of the church might hold.
What was that? What does that mean? Can you elaborate on that? What does it mean you have a liberal view on follow the prophet?
I'm a really big believer in the importance of personal revelation.
I think that's a good thing.
Right? But you'd wonder sometimes. And so I think that when we receive counsel, that I really believe that we should take it to the Lord and receive personal inspiration. And I think that it's very possible that you might receive personal revelation that is possibly contrary to the prophet, or not contrary to the prophet, but just, I'm trying to think of an example. I think the perfect example, which I would love to talk to him about, is Elder or President Nelson and the whole name thing. Because when he first gave his talk in 1990, was it, about how important it was to use the full name. And then the following conference, his prophet, President Hinckley, gave a talk that essentially said, "We appreciate that talk from Elder Nelson, but Mormon means more good, and this is a good thing, and we're going to stick with it, and we like it." And every prophet has said that, and Joseph Smith said that. So it's clear that President Nelson had a different opinion from his prophet, and it's clear that he didn't drop it.
Yeah. I think that is great, Rosemary. That is just a great story.
You know what I mean? Like he felt like, I disagree, and I'm not instantly repenting and changing my ways and saying that I 100% believe whatever President Hinckley is saying as far as the name thing. He felt like the name, using the full name of the church, was very important, and he held on to that for 18 years until he could make it the standard. And so I think it's a great example that sometimes we just might have a differing of opinion.
Yeah. Now, of course, you're curious about this, but apparently you have his email address, so you could just inquire.
I do not want to abuse that. I do not want to abuse that.
He just dropped that when you were in there filming. And by the way, should you need... Now, also, doesn't that violate protocol? Weren't you supposed to email your stake president and have him...
Yeah, but you know, in general conference... They talk about letters that they receive from members.
I know, it's so frustrating.
All the time. All the time.
It's frustrating because they say, don't write the apostles directly.
In the next breath.
And then, I received a letter last month. And you're like, well, come on, which is it, folks?
Yeah. And honestly, as someone said that to me after, like, shouldn't you talk to your stake president? And the idea, like, it never even occurred to me.
Yeah.
Because I was like... President Nelson, if anyone, I mean, he's given a lot of talks about how the women's voices are important. And he says, we need your voices, we need your thoughts, we need your opinions.
Just not in general conference.
So I kind of felt like, hey, yeah, like, do you really, or are we just saying that?
And let's be real. Like, what on earth does a typical stake president know about how general conference was planned and how the agenda was set and speakers were chosen?
Oh, you haven't been in those meetings, Devin? Oh, it's great. What happened? You sit down, they explain the whole thing to you, a lot of behind the scenes stuff. Elder Gong leads most of it.
Yeah.
And it's quite enlightening.
Oh, I love Elder Gong.
Who doesn't love Elder Gong? He's amazing.
Yeah.
He is a good dude.
I know. We've got lots of good dudes. There's plenty of good dudes.
We do.
They're all good dudes.
They are.
And by the way, we can get off on a tangent, but I'm still confused about the Mormon, not Mormon thing. I get it for the church, like what we call the church. But as far as the pressure I feel as a Latter-day Saint podcaster, whether or not to drop Mormon from our name, because everyone says, well, you can't be a Mormon now. And I still feel like, I don't know if this is me just trying to like interpret what I want to hear, but I just feel like the encouragement has been to use the proper name of the church. And perhaps as we don't refer to ourselves as Mormons, that'll kind of help in that effort. But yeah. I don't feel like I've seen very clear doctrine to say, you are not Mormons anymore. Don't call yourselves that.
I think he said that.
Yeah, it's kind of a mix. And then the Mormon Tabernacle Choir got changed. So that was kind of the big indicator. So
that was a big indicator that we're not Mormons anymore. But, you know, there is a problem, I think, with the rebranding. And I know President Nelson wouldn't call it a rebranding.
It's not a rebranding.
It's a rebranding. And, you know, it may not be motivated by branding, but it's a rebranding. And the problem is that it is an impossible mouthful to always say, I am a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. It is an impossible mouthful. I have a proposal because his concern, and he's been explicit, he's not any more excited about Latter-day Saint than he is about Mormon. He wants us to say,
it's true,
I am a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And I think that is just not practical. As much as I really actually have some enthusiasm for his rebranding, and I get where he's coming from in using the name of the revealed name of the church and giving credit to Jesus Christ, whose church this is. I mean, those are really important principles. But I think there is a shorthand we could use that I'm lobbying for, and I'm going to use this platform to lobby for this shorthand that I think President Nelson might even like, and that is Latter-day Christian.
Okay.
Because what it does is it incorporates the name of Christ into the shorthand name for its members. That's what I think he's after, and I think he would be happy with. So now there are three people in the world who know what I think that
All right. So, Rosemary, can you pass along his email address to Devin? And
here we go.
If you've ever sent an email to anyone in the church, I'm pretty sure you could figure it out.
Well, not all of us have Utah people, okay? I don't have a life of just sending emails to general authorities. Woohoo! No, I'm a normal person just going about my life.
I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see. I do think it's interesting that LDS Living which is owned by the church, is still LDS Living.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Good point.
But I also know that Deseret Book is making motions to no longer carry any books that have the improper naming included in their title.
That would include your book.
It would.
That's not good.
Well, and that's why we're going
to... Where's everyone supposed to go? Everyone's supposed to go down to just... Everyone's going to call up Greg Cofford and be like, help me, help me, help me. I mean, come on.
I don't know, but do they sell Mormon doctrine at Deseret Book? They must.
No, it went out of print a few years ago. They finally stopped selling it.
Probably better.
Which is probably good because it was erroneously named from the get-go.
Yes,
so right.
Not the best idea. So Benchmark Books is going to do very well in this case and just pick up all the, just everything that's left over. That's awesome. Yeah. Oh, Utah, you wonderful place. All right. This is riveting. I'm going to go straight political and talk for a moment about how the incoming Congress now, we're a week out of the election, is going to be the least LDS Congress in 30 years. What's that you say? Yes, some people on our Facebook wall said, why does this matter? Politicians are politicians. I don't know that it does matter, but I find it interesting at the very least. There will only be 11 Mormons in the House and the Senate. The lowest level since 1990. 11. Now, I think that's still above percentage-wise. Isn't that still better than our actual representation as far as a percentage?
I mean, it seems pretty good.
11 in the House and Senate, or just the Senate, did you say?
According to the Tribune, 11 in the House and Senate. Hmm. I mean, who's in the Senate? You'll have Mitt Romney, Crapo? I don't know. Is that it? Who's left? I can't think.
Yeah, and that
I don't know.
See,
yeah, and that we don't that sort of gets at this other issue. It's in this same topic, and we ought to talk about it just a little bit. Yeah. But there is another BYU alum that was just elected to the Senate, Jeff Flake's seat, right? Kyrsten Sinema? Is that her name?
I believe.
Sinema.
Yeah.
Okay. And but it's interesting. She is an open bisexual, no longer affiliates with the church, and no longer calls herself a Mormon. But she, I think, she's a returned missionary.
Is she even? I've never heard about her being a returned missionary. Is this another Devin? I can't name the quote for sure. Situation.
Yeah, it's probably. Right. I'm just checking. Right. I'm checking.
Well, if you can find out about that, that'd be great, because then I can go to her office once she's there.
She did not serve a mission. Dang it!
Darn it!
That would have been such a good fact.
So
I could be like, I could do my impersonation of Donald Trump and insist she did.
It is kind of an interesting flip. You've got Jeff Flake, who, politics or not, is a good guy and a pretty like straightforward Latter-day Saint, I would say. And then his seat is going to be taken by a former Mormon who is an open bisexual, which is just a very interesting flip as far as
I think it's looking exciting.
You think it's exciting, Rosemary?
Yeah.
Do tell.
Well, I just think switch it up a little. I just think it's exciting.
It's cool stuff. I mean, I know this is clearly a very left-leaning episode of This Week in Mormons, and that's okay. I'm totally okay with it.
I hope you don't lose too many subscribers.
I mean, we don't lose that many. Most people regard me as like the crazy liberal that I always have on this show, which is fine. It's just like right now I'm the moderate, which is great. This is very exciting for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel really good right now. Yeah,
we're helping you with your image.
It's good. I feel so basic, so easy. It is interesting though. Yeah, it's kind of funny. I don't know what it's going to mean. I wonder how the church feels about having fewer Latter-day Saints in Congress. I mean, we like to have our friends in high places.
Oh yeah,
I'm big on that.
Yeah, I think the church really loves it. I was never in the meetings when I worked on Capitol Hill. But I worked for an LDS member of Congress named Jake Garn back a long time ago. And I'm quite confident that the church liked and likes having representation in Congress. Oh, no doubt about it.
I mean, it does. We have to be thrilled about Senator Romney. I mean, let's not pretend. The man was sort of almost president.
Yep.
And now he's here. They've got to be psyched about that one.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure the brethren are thrilled that he has.
He's way more fun than Orrin Hatch.
Yeah.
I mean, a colonoscopy is more fun than Orrin Hatch. Anything's more fun than Orrin Hatch.
You know, the sad thing is, if Orrin Hatch had left two terms ago, he would be a hero in Utah. And he's kind of a butt of jokes. People in their thoughtful moments really do love and respect him here. He served for 40 years or whatever it was, and in so many ways a good human being. But he did overstay his welcome. He's very much a house guest that stayed too long.
It seems like in a lot of ways he knew he was heading out, and he felt a lot more comfortable to say a lot more stuff.
That happens a lot, though. I mean, look at Jeff Flake. Jeff Flake openly said, I would not be acting this way if I were running for re-election. So,
yeah.
That's the sad state of things, folks. Not to make it the political show, but here we are. This is the reality we live in.
Here we are.
I can't help myself. I've had, it's all consuming. I've got to chill out. I've actually felt calmer lately. I've been trying to do better with my scripture stuff, and because I get too wrapped up into this. I listen to my NPR, and I follow the news, and I go huffing around about the current state of political affairs, and I live in a very political town. But I've decided to I've been listening to the Saints book just like during my commute instead of doing this. It's been pretty good. Honestly, I've enjoyed myself. It's weird how when you invest in some more positive endeavors, it actually makes you feel better overall. Go figure, right? Who knew?
Yeah, it is really an amazing book, that Saints book. Have you read it yet, Rosemary?
I haven't, which I feel awful for because he sent me a copy.
I hate to put you on the spot. I apologize for that. I just didn't want to.
Never apologize for putting Rosemary on the spot. That's how we find out about her love life. Just be bold.
Yeah, that's right. We need to come back to that before we're done. But, you know, the Saints book, I thought was a remarkable step forward in the church's telling of its history. It's very accessible. I don't know if you would agree, Jeff, but it seemed to me to be written at almost, I would have said, a sixth grade level, so that anyone 12 or older can read and understand church history. It's really accessible.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. From what I've listened to, I don't know. I mean, I'm on like chapter 10.
Yeah.
How many chapters are there total?
No, 50 or so.
Oh, I thought I was further along than I am. Darn.
But it's great.
Well, that's disappointing. But it is really great. I've enjoyed it so far. So right now, I would describe it as like rough stone rolling for dummies.
Yeah.
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 Maybe rough stone rolling light.
Yeah, that's actually a better way to say it. Rough stone rolling light.
Yeah.
Rough stone rolling is a very dense book and with tons of good information. But I remember a lot of it now that I'm listening to this book. I'm like, yep, I remember learning about that and about that and about that.
But there are things in Saints that aren't in Rough Stone Rolling, I believe.
Yeah, for sure.
Having read Rough Stone Rolling a couple of times, I don't believe there at all. And there are some great stories in there that should always have been part of the telling, but have kind of been edited out. And I think they really add a lot to our understanding of church history. You know, one of my favorite stories was of the Quorum of the Twelve getting into a full-on brawl with guns and knives in the Kirtland Temple.
Yo, I gotta read this book.
Yeah, yeah. And you go, oh, okay. Well, when the brethren say they're in harmony and they get along, we have to remember that the context for that statement is guns and knives and a physical brawl in the temple. And so, yeah, they're in harmony because they can now speak civilly about these topics. I don't know that they're necessarily in perfect alignment on everything before a decision's made. So anyway, it's I just thought it was really, a really well done book for bringing in all kinds of things. Good discussion of Joseph Smith's polygamy, including early polygamy. Mm-hmm. It wrestles a little bit at a sixth grade level. It wrestles with Joseph Smith's lying about polygamy to Emma and, in fact, to Hiram. I had not picked up on this interesting nuance. Hiram was one of the last to know, if you can imagine. Yeah.
Hmm. I didn't know that either.
Yeah. So it's, I think the book does a really good job of giving us, you know, it would inoculate almost any sixth grader who later comes upon church history stories. If you really read and digest this as a sixth grader, nothing will surprise you again. There's nothing in church history that's really going to freak you out.
And you have to think that might be some of the goal, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so much of this these efforts in transparency are about that. And by writing it at a certain level, that's exactly what that does. That inoculates a rising generation against, it's almost a cliche at this point. You know, you discover some stuff online over the weekend and decide you don't believe anymore, right?
My favorite thing about this book.
I was just going to say, I think it's possible to listen to it, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It is.
I think that might be intimidating to a lot of people, but listening to something, It's a lot more digestible.
I find
you can listen to it, of course, in the Gospel Library app. It's right there, you know. I think the only downside of that is it doesn't save your progress because you could do. There's an audiobook version on the Deseret Book app. I'm not sure if that's free.
Mm. Yeah, I paid for mine on Audible. Went all out.
Or on Audible. Yeah. So there you go.
But it's, what my favorite story about the book was that a member of our stake presidency told me that his son, who's about 12, picked up the word damned. He starts describing everything as damned because that word is used in the book, this damned That's thing or that cool. damned thing.
That's cool.
Oh, good.
Sorry.
No, you're
do we have to mark this as for adults only now or something?
I'll put an explicit tag.
There we go. Yeah, that's right. That's okay.
When you look at this in iTunes, it's going to have those big red letters in front of it.
It'll get twice the downloads if you do.
Okay, well, gosh, we're already running long on time, aren't we? Rosemary, what do you got? What do you want to talk about? Tell us.
One thing that I think is really important, and this is sensitive to me because I've been recently talking to a lot of early return missionaries, is that the church, I think, is making a really big effort to reach out more to early return missionaries and talk to them. There was a piece in the Deseret News and Church News about early return missionaries, and that this is not something that needs to be like, it doesn't need to define you. It doesn't need to ruin your life. Obviously, that doesn't diminish the actual pain and struggle that comes along with that process. But it's good to hear that from the church. And then now if missionaries come home early from their mission for whatever reason, there is an option to serve an alternative type of mission in a service mission, which I worked with a lot of service missionaries while I was working at the church, and I honestly in some ways felt jealous of them because they were able to, they would be like PAs on Mormon message sets or working in an office situation, and they left their mission with a great resume and like solid on the job training and experience. And in some cases, jobs.
Well, I love the new process.
That is really cool.
And I love this new, the new process now that they just announced this week, though, too, is now everybody applies to go on a mission
in the same way,
regardless.
Yeah.
If you're interested, right? You know, they encourage everyone to do it.
Yeah.
And then they will decide through the process which type of mission you may serve.
Yeah. It's brilliant to help reduce the stigma of not being able to serve a traditional proselyting mission. It's brilliant.
Now, not to be the naysayer, do you worry about optics of it, though, still? Like, because isn't the sort of the default ideal that one, that's the majority, they presume, are still going to be called to proselytizing missions? And it kind of still, does it still feel like the fallback is the service missions, which are still super important? But do we worry about that? We're trying to not to have the cultural stigma there, but I still worry that they're going to say, oh, you can't do a proselytizing mission because of emotional or health reasons, so you will serve plan B. Well, you get to do the service.
Has anyone heard rumors? Anyone else heard rumors that like more mission things, types will be available just to choose from? I mean, I feel like,
what do you mean? You choose your mission type?
No, just like, I obviously this is a complete rumor and I have nothing substantial to back it up, but just that maybe more missions will be service focused, and that and that, and not so much like you're not capable of proselyting, but like in this mission, in this country, in this area, we focus on doing service, and that might better suit some people who don't feel like going and knocking doors feels comfy to them. I think that would be great to give people more.
It's huge.
Yeah.
And I do think it's enormous for, I mean, I know plenty of people, I've got relatives even who are not in a place where they could realistically serve and deal with the rigors, I guess, of a proselytizing mission, but would jump at the chance to be part of these service missions. And what's so cool about them is you're still called, you're set apart, you have a farewell, like all the usual stuff, but you live at home and you dedicate your time in a different way. And that's huge. Yeah. And like you said, that Devin, that will help remove the stigma. Instead of saying, well, you can't go, it's okay that you can't go. And they might still tell some people you're just honorably excused from serving. That's another new possibility.
Yeah.
But
I think that's going to be a very short list.
Yeah, probably.
And that I love that. People who are willing to serve, I think what the church is trying to do here, the spirit of it is, if you're willing to serve, really willing, we will find a way to help you serve a mission.
Exactly. Exactly. That's enormous. That's what it should be.
Yeah.
I mean, I love to see that. I've got a couple of mentions I'm going to throw your way. I'm very excited because I'm a temple goon. I like to track temple construction, and we predict them and do all those things. So the Urdaneta Philippines Temple is finally going to start construction in January. It was announced 8 years ago by President Monson.
Wow.
Long time ago. And the Philippines has since had announced they've built one more and they're building three other ones right now too. Yeah, because I got two in Davao and another one in Manila. All those have kind of gotten underway, and they've had a lot of land issues with the Urdaneta site. So it's very cool. They finally got that sorted out. I kind of thought this was going to go the way of the one they wanted to put up in White Plains, New York years ago, and then they just sort of gave up. Mm-hmm. It's one of those temples that's still officially on the books, but they're just never going to build it.
Is White Plains, New York seriously still on the books?
I don't know if it's like gone. I mean, they're never going to build it, especially because they built the one in Manhattan and they built one in Connecticut and they've got one in Philly. You know, there's no need. It wasn't actually White Plains, but it had a different name.
Yeah.
But anyway, this is great. Good for the Philippines. More temples for them. Yay, Ra. While my beloved Europe continues to dwindle in unbelief. It's kind of sad on that front, but that's okay. Mm. Good for the Philippines. Very happy for them. Oh, that said, we did receive word that the Lisbon, Portugal temple received its Moroni today. Hasn't even hit the press yet. Good for them in Lisbon, everybody.
There you go. Congratulations, Lisbon.
Tudo bem. That's what they say.
Tudo bem. Tudo bem.
Whatever. Anyway, and another quick shout out. Deseret News, LDS Living ran a great article about the 69-year-old stake patriarch from California who climbed the Matterhorn, who happened to be in my stake presidency growing up and when I went on my mission. And so, good old Niall Sorensen, you are dear to my heart, you silly, silly orthodontist and wonderful man. He gave the greatest state conference presentations, and they were like presentations, the PowerPoint, but in a legit way. Some people don't maximize the use of PowerPoint in stake meetings. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
He knew what was up. I never had a dull presentation from this fine man. So that was just
That's great.
That was just a treat for me to stumble across in LDS Living. Thank you, Trent Toon, you wonderful and silly man. Anywho, anybody else have any other interesting items they want to bring forward before we break?
You know, you had flagged, Jeff, for our discussion today. Sam Young's excommunication appeal was reviewed and not approved. So he remains excommunicated. Now, of course, Sam Young was the former LDS bishop who did a 3-week hunger strike.
Yep.
Literally on the corner of South Temple and Main Street in downtown Salt Lake to bring attention to this issue of bishops' interviews, especially with young women, worthiness interviews. And it's an interesting story. I think you probably talked about it in the past.
A little bit, yeah, we have.
Clearly, his approach did not yield a surprising outcome.
No.
Right? No, it didn't. You can't try to like shame the church into action. It doesn't usually end well.
But I think the discussion that he raised is so really important. And if we're going to tell youth that they shouldn't have sex, we kind of have to ask them once in a while if they do. And that creates a difficult situation for bishops. And I think having some thoughtful discussion around how to do that with parents, without parents, is just incredibly important. I mean, I'm really glad he raised it. Other people have raised it as well, and maybe he shouldn't get any credit for raising it the way he did, but certainly this is an important topic.
It is, for sure. It's interesting all that happened last week, too, after This American Life had that. I don't know if you listened last week to the episode about awkward bishops interviews. That was big. And then,
Radio West
picked up on it. What was that?
I said awkward / inappropriate.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Inappropriate. Yes. So,
but interesting. You know, if you think about it, if you're a bishop, after you ask someone, do you live the law of chastity, if the answer is no, you are immediately in trouble.
Why?
As a 45-year-old man talking to a 14-year-old girl, you now have a difficult situation. If you don't feel uncomfortable about that, I think there's something wrong with you. Because now you're saying to someone, well, tell me about why, what happened that you don't feel like you live the word of wisdom or the law of chastity. You're just going down this
slope. It's a risky path, but I think I think with a little bit more help, we could navigate that carefully. But I think the main thing is that there are some questions being asked that, like, just do not need to be asked, which I think the This American Life really well highlighted, that, like, I would love if all bishops were proceeding, like, very carefully past that point. But that's just not happening.
Well, there's great new guidance out, but I still think anytime a child says to a middle-aged man, no, I don't live the law of chastity, you are now in troubled waters. It is a really difficult situation because now a bishop is tasked with trying to understand what happened without making this into some purient topic of, you know, a discussion about sex acts and, you know, details that are awkward. And yet it gets directly at worthiness and how serious a thing was it. You know, one 13-year-old girl might say she doesn't live the law of chastity because she fantasizes about kissing boys. And another girl may be thinking, or another boy, maybe I should say, that, you know, as long as our clothes are on, we're okay.
Right.
And, you know, so you just have all these.
That's why I think education is just so important. Like, if everyone knew ahead of time, like, what questions would be like and what follow-up questions would be like and what kind of things are okay and what aren't, then I think we could introduce, like, a lot more of consent into the situation, that I would know by saying no to that question, I know what's coming next and I agree to that. And also just an agreement that, like, at any point I can say I am not comfortable and that it will stop. You know, like, I think just leveling the playing fields a little bit and having more education would be, on both sides of the table, would be so beneficial for literally everyone involved, both the child or the young adult and the bishop. I think most bishops would be relieved to be like, whew, that takes a lot of pressure off of me if we all know what's going on here.
Totally agree.
For sure. And I think, like a lot of things, the official guidance has never been to be so explicit, but we need to do a better job training and ensuring that people understand that, you know, the standards.
The guidance is to be pretty probing. It was.
It used to be more.
It's changed. Yeah, it was. But, I mean, especially in a few circumstances, but especially for, you know, missionaries going out, and of course they're adults, but they're 18-year-old adults. Being interviewed by 50-year-old men.
Well, I remember that. I remember when my stake president, the phrase he used was squeaky clean missionaries. He says, we send out squeaky clean missionaries. Now, he never probed or asked me too much stuff. He asked me if I obeyed the law of chastity and things like that, but I knew what that meant.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, I'm good. But he would sit on it a bit, not while getting explicit about anything, but just saying, okay, because we want to be really sure about this. So if there's anything that comes up, you let me know. And I'm like, okay. Good deal.
Now, I never had a mission president ask about masturbation, but I think many mission presidents do.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
And I find that all kinds of creepy.
Amen.
Beautiful. Right, well, guess what? We're out of time. So on that uplifting note.
On the masturbation note.
On that note, okay.
And that's the name of this episode. anyway, Devin Thorpe.
Jeff, are you ever going to have me back?
I hope so, Devin.
Oh, Devin, you're golden. Don't worry. We've said so much worse on this show. You have no idea.
Well, thank you. You're very kind. And it was so fun to be here with Rosemary and you, Jeff. This has been a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
Good. I'm glad. So, Devin, we're gonna link to your your great, wonderful nonprofit fundraiser you've got going on and all your other properties and everything you're doing there, Your World. Appreciate you coming on. And Rosemary Card of Qmore and Qnor also crushing it. I'm very thankful both of you spent time with me this week. Thank you very much.
Great discussion.
Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure.
And you can find us all over the interwebs at thisweekinmormons.com. Please send us an email, contact@thisweekinmormons.com. Join us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you want to help the show, help support the show, You can go to Patreon, of course. It's Patreon, Patreon.com/ThisWeekInMormons. Become a patron. It means you put up like $1 a month and you help you grease the wheels, so to speak. We would very much appreciate that and appreciate you listening in and tuning in and sticking with us. Please spread the word. And once again, very thankful for our guests. Nice of them to join us this week. And I hope you have a terrific Thanksgiving. This Week in Mormons is a production of me and other people. Have a wonderful week, everybody. Be well, be holy, be happy. Bye-bye.